Well, welcome to the Grace Hour, a daily program that takes a dive into the believer's daily challenges and helps him learn his faith in a practical way. My name is Andrew Silva, and I'm joined here with my wonderful cousin, Jillian Coelho, Dirk, in the studio. And today we're going to be talking about reaching people from Hindu and Buddhist backgrounds with the gospel. It's awesome to be here with you.
It is. It's pretty exciting. Yeah. I mean, where do we even start? Like, we didn't grow up in this country and we're both here.
We both
grew up in India. And yeah, what was it like growing up in Mumbai, like going to school?
Yeah, we go to school. We have maybe, so the school I went to was a Hindu school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go every morning and we'd line up for so-called chapel and we'd have a prayer time. And the prayers would be Hindu chants, maybe a little reading from the Hindu book, and then we'd start our day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so different to what we're learning over here and what we're seeing over here, even in GGCA, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so different, and maybe we could talk a little bit about that and give people a little bit of insight into our culture.
Yeah, because I remember like growing up, not just going to school, but like maybe even like walking on the street, it's much different because you see a temple or a monastery, or you'll see a mosque or any sort of like place of worship that's not a church, you know, and you see people going and you see people offering sacrifices and performing their daily rituals, and that's just their way of life.
Yeah.
But like here, it's much different. It's like you usually see churches.
Yeah.
But just when we were assigned the task of talking about this, I just thought about how different our perspective might be on like what daily life looks like when you grow up in a place that's filled with people that come from different religious backgrounds.
Yeah.
Particularly Hindu and like Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
And the subject of like idolatry.
Yeah.
And man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's like, there's so much to unpack just with that.
I know. I'm really excited to talk about this. I mean, we are by no means experts on this topic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is just maybe
yeah,
our point of view of how we saw things growing up, living in a Hindu culture. And I feel like we should talk about, before we get into Hinduism and Buddhism, we should talk about maybe the root of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man and idolatry,
mm-hmm.
right? That's really the root of it. And we see that in Exodus 32, right? So Moses goes up the mountain and he delays a little bit, and then the Israelites, they fashion a golden calf, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about this, like God gave them the Ten Commandments maybe two months earlier. And the commandment, God's commandment is absolute, right? Because
mm-hmm.
he's a holy God, and the word holy is separate from the common, right? He's not common. He's a holy God. But here we see that they fashion a golden calf.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? You know? And I could think of two reasons. Maybe one is that they didn't know God's heart, and maybe they thought that the commandment was too strict. But making an idol in the form of man, right? Or in the form of an animal gives you more control over your God. So in a way, I make the God, so I'm the God of my God. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it puts man really in the place where he's driving it.
Yeah.
He's not really submitting himself to, like, the creator, because he is the creator in that instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting mm-hmm. is that although they wanted autonomy from God, they still desperately needed something to worship.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is that? Because man is made to worship God. The whole purpose of man on this earth is to worship and glorify God.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing I was thinking of is man needs God because his conscience is guilty. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Romans 2, is it Romans 2? His conscience bears witness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He has this deep innate need for maybe a higher power, because his conscience is guilty.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, when you were just talking with me and we were bouncing ideas about like man and idolatry, like I've been reading through John and the Gospel of John, and I was just reading about Jesus's encounter with the woman at the well, And it's interesting, like, when Jesus asks the woman at the well to give him a drink, she tells him, like, you have nothing to draw with because the well is deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that passage a lot of times, but this time it was a little bit different because I was just thinking, why did she say that the well is deep? You know, like, what could she have been drawing with? What are people drawing with? What does the word deep even mean?
Mm.
And it got me thinking that really she's talking about her heart, and that really, like, in a way, Jesus's encounter with her is like a metaphor for the condition of humanity.
Mm.
Like, she's a woman at this well, and she's drawing from this deep well that maybe it's human philosophy, it's worldly religion, but really the depth of that well, like the heart of man, it's evil.
Mm.
And it can't really, like, you can't reach within it to find anything that's gonna sort of last, you know? And
yeah.
Like a couple of verses that are really interesting is Proverbs 18:2, like, a fool takes delight in his heart and discovering his heart. Jeremiah 17, like, the heart is wicked and it's evil, like, who can know it? Genesis 6, every intention of the thoughts of the heart, they were evil continually.
Yeah.
But what is Jesus saying in response to her statement that the well is deep? He wasn't saying, like, oh, let me give you something that, you know, you can reach in and draw out of it. He's saying, like, not only will you not need to reach, you'll never thirst again, and there will be a spring that comes out of you.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, like, he also tells her that you worship in verse 22 of that same chapter. He says, you worship, but you don't know what you worship.
Mm.
So it's like coming back to what you're saying is people worship. They're made to worship.
Yeah.
But because the heart is so evil, they're reaching for the wrong things within them.
Mm.
But what Christ is saying is, like, I have something to offer you that's not like anything you've ever known. And like Isaiah 12, you know, it's like, let us draw with joy from the wells of salvation, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the Spirit searches for the deep things of God. So, like, when we're looking at all these religions, we're seeing them reach within this well of, like, human making that's not really filling them in any sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, while we unpack, like, maybe what these religions believe, it's, we're going to just see how it's not filling them in any capacity.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking of Jesus' encounter with the woman. And in one very short conversation, right, he unpacked years and years, maybe 700 years of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the Jews against the Samaritans, and Samaritans were hated. But, like, in one very short encounter, like, he unpacked that. Right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's something that we keep in mind as we talk to someone from a Hindu and Buddhist background. They have years and years of culture and the way they're brought up. And we don't really know how they were brought up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that can really help us with our approach talking to these people. Like, what questions do we ask them? How do I really know what someone believes unless I ask him a question, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ask and listen, because Jesus listened to what she said too. You know, like, well, let's get into, like, a little bit of what this religion, what Hinduism even is, you know?
Yeah. Is it the third largest
religion
in the world?
Largest religion.
330 million gods,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and they claim to be one of the oldest religions.
Yeah, but yet it leaves, I think, over close to 1 billion people in darkness.
Yeah.
Right?
Worship of many gods. So, like, polytheism,
mm-hmm.
And people sort of, depending on what they're going through in their life, will probably adopt maybe one of these million gods because it sort of fits the narrative of their life.
Yeah.
You know, so
but how did they come to having so many gods? Like, what do they really believe?
Yeah, that's a good question. So to my understanding, like, the one impersonal, ultimate, and unknowable spiritual reality, which is a packed sentence, is, like, what they call the Brahma, which is, like, the ultimate source.
Mm-hmm.
And that source is just the basis for which all these other gods are manifested. But the reality is that they claim that all these gods are just mythological beings that have like evolved from this source. And really, when you look, take a closer look at what these people are worshiping, it's just, let's say, like the god Shiva, who represents death and disillusion, or the god Krishna, who represents love and compassion, or Ganesh, like the elephant god, you know, he represents success, knowledge, wealth. You probably see him at like an Indian restaurant right when you walk in here in America.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but these gods are probably taken on by people depending on what circumstance they're going through in their life. You know, if it's a crisis they're in because of money, it's like, let's worship this god and offer sacrifices to this god because we'll be blessed. Yeah. And then it also brings us to the whole aspect of like what cycle of life they're in, because they believe that they're in this constant cycle of reincarnation and karma, and their actions have consequences that will cause them to sort of either pay for it, or they'll be blessed for their decisions in their next life. So there's a lot that
before we go on to reincarnation, right? I thought of something as you were talking about the different gods that they have, and some of them, sometimes it's forces of nature, right?
Right,
it's a tree, they worship the tree, they worship a force of nature, right? And I was thinking, I think it's Galatians 4, where it talks about the elementary things of this world, the beggarly elements of this world.
Right.
Right? And that's what they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But how awesome is it to show them that we have a God that is real, and
right.
He's beyond the elementary and the beggarly things of this world. Right? A God who lives and speaks. Right? Psalm 115, they make a God who has ears, but he doesn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
He has a mouth, but he doesn't speak. He has eyes, but he doesn't see.
Right.
Right. And Isaiah 46, they carry this God on their shoulders, and they put him wherever they go, they place him down there.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't move, and they cry out to him in their distress, but he doesn't answer. Right.
Yeah.
How awesome is it to show people that we have a God that's beyond these beggarly elements? Right.
Yeah.
So continue.
Like, that's a good question. Is like, at what point, when you now you know like some of these things that a Hindu believes, like at what point does the gospel come in, you know? And it's an interesting question. Is I know that you believe in a God that you've probably made with your own hands, or that, you know, it's fitting the lifestyle that you're in. But the beauty of the Christian message of what Jesus is saying is like, it doesn't have to be about one attribute. It doesn't have to be about, you know, paying for your sins, wherein your next life will be the consequence of this life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like,
can we talk about that a little bit?
Can
we talk about karma a little bit? Reincarnation. So they believe in samsara, right? Which is reincarnation.
The continuous cycle.
Okay.
Yeah, where it's like, it's unending. Who's in control of when it starts, when it ends, what happens?
And then based on the way I live my life in this life, right, I'm born into the next life as a higher or lower being, correct? Right? And they accumulate this thing called, either it's called karmic debt, right?
Right.
If I'm a bad person, so they don't believe in sin. Sin is not a concept, but they believe in good and evil, right? The more good I do, the better my karmic rating is, in a way.
Yeah.
And then the more evil I do, the more karmic debt I accumulate, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But then it kind of negates the whole point of someone who sets out in their life to do good for those who are oppressed. Because let's say somebody who is oppressed is paying off what they've done in their previous life.
Yeah.
You know, so the more that you learn about someone's faith in terms of like worldly religion, you kind of see the cracks and the flaws.
Yeah.
But I think the goal in terms of knowing all these tenets of their faith is maybe not to humiliate them.
Oh, yeah.
Or to sort of make them feel like we don't care.
Yeah.
The whole point is that we want to show them that we have a message for them that was not made by man.
Mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and like I'm thinking like 1 Timothy 1:5, right? The goal of our instruction is love from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith.
Yes.
Like if it's not based, if it's not driven by those things, maybe I need to check my motives again, right?
Yeah.
It's love from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. And it's I don't want to have all this information and make them look silly, because that's not the goal. I may win the debate, but I may lose the person, right?
Right.
I want to win the person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important. Like the love and the forgiveness of Christ goes a long way. It's much more powerful than we can even realize, you know, because they're coming from a place where this ultimate supreme, like, reality that one day they hope they'll be reunited with is not personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's impersonal. Yeah. It's far from them.
Yeah.
Like, they worship gods that can't hear them.
Mm-hmm.
They offer sacrifices that are offered sometimes even by, not them, by priests. They don't even know what's happening.
Yeah.
So a believer going to witness to this person that's, like, rooted in this way of life,
mm-hmm,
has to understand that the power that the gospel has in terms of changing that person's life may not be right off the bat.
Yeah.
It could be something
very
that
slow.
Yeah, it takes
right.
time
yeah.
that maybe you need a lot more patience just because of how deeply rooted these people are
yeah.
in the traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just the mindset. Maybe they're not so much practicing the traditions. But
yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
I mean, I think, like, it's different when you're on the street and you're evangelizing someone. You have maybe, like, a few minutes of your time, right? Whereas you have a person who's a Hindu and he's at work with you. Or maybe you're in college together with him and then you have more time, right? And then I would recommend maybe getting to know them, right? Asking questions about their culture. Really taking interest in what they believe and how they grew up, you know? And that goes a long way. That goes a long way. As otherwise, it could look like you're trying to propagate a message.
Right.
But that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying
mm-hmm.
to give them the words of eternal life, right? The words that have the power to change their life.
Right.
Right? I think of this quote by Mahatma Gandhi,
mm-hmm.
right? Based on what he was saying, he says, and Mahatma Gandhi is the father of our nation, right? And he says, "It's a constant torture for me that I'm still so far from him whom I know to be my very life and being. I know it's my own wretchedness and wickedness that keeps me from him." Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think of Acts 17, right? He is not far from us.
Mm-hmm.
In him we live and move and have our being. He's not far from us. Right? That's the message that we have for these people.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you know that Mahatma Gandhi actually used, like, passages from the Bible, like the Sermon on the Mount,
yeah.
for some of his speeches when he was stirring up the nation?
Mm-hmm.
India against, like, fighting for their freedom
yeah.
against the British. And he said, yeah. like, those passages were so motivational to him that they stirred up the sentiments of people to, like, recognize that they have purpose.
Yeah.
So really, like, that's the power of what is in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's the only tool that
yeah.
someone really needs, you know?
Yeah.
And then just, like, thinking about,
okay, can I ask you a question? Let's say you're on the street
okay.
and you come across someone, right? And he's a Hindu, and you have 10 minutes to share the gospel with them.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you start? What questions do you ask? You know?
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, we know a little bit about karma,
mm-hmm.
right? We know a little bit from what we've talked about. We know a little bit about their culture. Maybe we don't have time to ask them or talk in detail, but maybe we ask them, like questions like, does karma solve the problem of evil?
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's mm-hmm. a good question, because I don't think it does.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, it's a good question. I'm just thinking about, like, coming back to the point of, like, how we live our lives.
Yeah.
You know? Like, let's say you have a neighbor who you can't really relate to them. Like, that's a pretty common phenomenon, like, all over the world. And I remember growing up, there was this neighbor that we had, and a lot of the people in our neighborhood would really, like, act out against her because
mm-hmm.
she wasn't the most pleasant person.
Yeah.
But for some reason, like, our family found it, like, in our hearts, by God's grace, to just be loving.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in our home just talking about, like greater love has no man mm-hmm. than he who is willing to lay his life down for his friend.
Yeah.
Or, like, love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
And it's just acts of kindness, like showing somebody love. And I remember coming home from school one day, and one of my neighbors was watching my mom being really kind to this neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me, like, you know, how could she do this? You know, like, that lady is, like, reaping the consequences of her choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it, and I was probably, like, 15. So I was like, you know,
yeah,
God, like, I don't know, like, what should I say? But I remember talking about the parable or the story of the prodigal son. It's not a parable. But, and I just remember telling the lady, like, do you think that just because this son left his house, which he may have thought was right, mm-hmm. and he had his free will, he made a decision, he left. He took everything that was his, and he went, and he spent it.
Mm.
Left his father's house. And his father had every right to say to him, you're not welcome.
Mm.
You know, and he probably would have been justified. But the father didn't do that. The father said, didn't even say anything, actually. He just ran towards him and embraced him. And I just remember, like, that story stuck with that lady.
Wow.
And just the power of what our message represents. You know, it's a transformed life.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we're not trying to make the, like, we're not trying to better the old.
Yeah.
Like, that's what, that even, like, if you talk to a Buddhist person, you know, like, coming to that religion, it's like, you know, you can deny your desires, you can sort of live this life of happiness if you just stay on the straight path and, like, don't live in your flesh. But that's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying you can't make the old better. I'm trying to give you something that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's, I told
your story,
and it's John, like, that's what Jesus is offering. You know, maybe it doesn't happen in the timeline that we think, but it's like these short principles of truth maybe speak louder than anything that we could really, like, say.
Yeah.
You know, it's just living life.
Yeah. I think that you mentioned parables, right? And I think because Indian culture is so rooted in stories and mythology, right? I think stories are a good way to reach people.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when we go to the villages and we talk, share the gospel with these poor people who have nothing. They're farmers, right? I remember talking about Luke 15, right? And they were so touched.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because stories resonate with their heart, right? And there's a story of, I think it was Apostle Thomas who went to India.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He came to India and he didn't know the culture. He didn't know the language. Didn't know a lot of about the people. So he observed this group of people. They would go down by the river and worship the sun, right? And then they would scoop up water in their hands from the river and pour it back into the river.
Yeah.
And he observed them doing this for a while. And then one day he asked them, why do you guys do this? And they said to him, we believe that when we do this, the water goes to our ancestors who are in a lower life form of reincarnation, right? So he thought about it for a few days, and then he went to the river, he picked up some water, and he put it on the dry ground. And he kept doing this for a few days, right? And then the people come to him, and they ask him, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I have a vineyard back in Israel, and I believe that when I pick up water and pour it out on the ground, it waters my vineyard in Israel, right?
Yeah.
And they said to him, well, that's foolish. It can't happen. And he explained to them, what they were doing was the same thing, right? So it's like finding these creative ways to share the gospel with people, like drawing things from their culture that you think can be a real bridge between Christianity and Hinduism,
right?
And then building that bridge,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and it's also like there are things in the culture that, like, could be like a fish hook for the gospel. But there's also things that you kind of have to navigate and not use. Like, if you talk to an Indian or a Hindu about, like, rebirth, it's like, yeah, of course Jesus offers you, like, rebirth.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, like, that's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
you know? So just being mindful when you do speak that, yeah, like coming back to our point where you ask questions and you listen and you really see like where someone's coming from when you share.
Yeah. You must be born again. You must be born again. And say, yeah, I know. I know, you know, but like maybe instead of using that word born again, we use freed from this life, this continuous life of suffering that you're stuck in, you're trapped in. And maybe we could talk about that a little bit. Like, how do you reach someone who believes in this cycle of reincarnation?
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's what's taught in Buddhism as well. Right. It's maybe it's not so much graven images, but it's like your concept of life.
Yeah.
And I think
they have like four ways that I think this is Hinduism, and they have four ways that you can really attain salvation, which is, as you said in the start, is becoming one with the Supreme Being, right? And surprisingly, in the Western culture, we don't think about this, but it's yoga and meditation. That's right. Yoga and meditation is actually a Hindu practice.
Right.
You know, and it's a way for them to be one with the Supreme Being. So that's one way of salvation. The other way is the way of works, which we talked about, is karma. I do good works and bad works, and if I do enough good works over my whole life, maybe I'll attain salvation with one. Right? There's another way, it's called the way of knowledge, which is total rejection and denial of yourself to attain enlightenment in a way. That goes with Buddhism too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the third one is a way of devotion, and this is they all have one God, and they believe that if I worship this one God, they pick one God out of the millions,
right?
And, and they say if I am completely devoted to this one God, right, he will usher me into salvation.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a couple of ways that they have in mind to attain salvation. But what do we have to say to that? What do we believe?
I mean, it's interesting that when you were talking, it's like they all have different ways. And when I was thinking about it and reading about it, I read this one quote that it says, like, the truth is one. Like, no matter what way you might be pursuing, the truth is one. Yeah. It's just that different sages or different teachers or whatever, like, religious leader, they call it by different names. And maybe that is the concept that we're trying to correct, is that the truth is not all in all.
Yeah.
There's one truth.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing about the truth, is that it demands for it to be exclusive.
Yeah.
And that's what Jesus said. He said, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life.
Yeah.
No one goes to the Father except through me. So when we are talking to somebody that is claiming that there's all these ways to reach God or to find God, that's the myth that we're trying to bust, is that there's only one way. That when we preach Christ to them, it's not that they're just going to take this picture of Christ,
put it right up there with all the other gods.
Yeah, it's that Jesus is separate. He's not like the other gods.
Yeah.
And those other gods are like nothing like him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So we focus on the superiority of Christ.
Yeah.
Right? What makes Christ so much better than your gods? Right? He is the way. Right? None of the other gods,
they didn't claim to be.
They didn't claim to be God, and they didn't claim to know a way to God.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, they do have one way. It's works. Right? Mm-hmm. Work your way up. But as we and as you talked about this earlier, it's like a lot of soul seeking. Soul searching, right?
Yeah.
Right, a lot of like drawing out from your deep well, right? But then we have the message that there's nothing good inside there.
Right.
Right? Out of the heart come all the things that defile you. Right? It's evil. We're born in a sin nature. And here's the thing that they don't address. No religion addresses our sin nature.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's our default state, our sin nature. Right? Given the choice, we always revert back to us, to our flesh and our sin nature.
Yeah.
And that's something that maybe they struggle with a lot, because they try to do all these good works, but then they realize, like, the good I want to do, I don't do. But they don't know why, and we know why.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And just, like...
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to a lady last week who comes from a Buddhist background, and she was mentioning to me, because I asked her, I said, she's now a believer in Christ, and she was boldly proclaiming how thankful she is to have seen the light of who Jesus is.
Mm.
And so that statement kind of caught my attention, and I asked her, I said, like, what about the Christian faith, or what about Jesus drew you to seek him,
yeah.
you know? And she said something similar to what you were saying, that, you know, she was drawing from a source that wasn't really satisfying her,
mm-hmm.
that she was really seeking for something her whole life that she couldn't find in Buddhism.
Yeah.
That whether it was going to the monasteries, or whether the monks performing rituals on behalf of the people, or what Buddhism actually believes is like denying your desires and living a happy life. And that's the key, is like, there's like no suffering, like, you know. And so yeah. she was just kind of expressing how Jesus is saying, like, there will be suffering.
Yeah.
You know, there will be trials, there will be tribulations, but she said, like Jesus says, like, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. So what are these other religions saying? Like, you know, yeah. maybe after you're reaching nirvana, or when you attain moksha, salvation, like, mm-hmm. you will be where you need to be.
Yeah.
But the beauty of what the Bible is saying is, like, you can have salvation now.
Mm-hmm.
And that even though you could be stuck in suffering and pain in this life, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not trying to better your heart.
Yeah.
It can't be better.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to offer you
a new heart yeah.
and a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about that? Is like, if we think about like a Buddhist and where they're coming from, it's all about psychological living. It's all about trying to stay on the path that, you know, will keep you. And if you stray away from it, you still have to deny that.
Yeah.
Deny the desires. Live a life of peace.
Mm-hmm.
But how can you have peace if yeah. you still have sin?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. what do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I think of this awesome passage in Isaiah 59, right? I was reading this. It talks about a God addressing idolatry. And it says, we grope for a wall like the blind. We grow up like those who have no eyes. We stumble at noon in the twilight among those full of vigor, and we're like dead men. Right? So they're reaching out for a wall, like the blind, and they grow up like those who have no eyes. They're hoping for light, but all they find is darkness. Right?
Yeah.
And then here's the message. The Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no justice. He saw that there was no man, and his own arm brought him salvation. Like, that's the message we have. So, like, we see this whole culture and this whole nation, like, they're reaching out for the light, but all they grasp is darkness. You know, it's like this endless cycle of trying to reach God.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But all they find is darkness, and then God sees that there's no one, so He sends His own arm, Jesus Christ, and He brings salvation.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
And I think of this story. There was this lady in our church. She's passed now, but she was from a Hindu background, a Brahmin background, and Brahmins are like the priestly caste of the Hindus. And she would wake up every morning, and she had a little idol, little altar in the house where she had an idol, and she would pray to that idol and offer and cook food every morning for that idol, and she would offer it to the idol. The idol would not eat it, of course, but like right. it would be there, and she would do that every day, right? And this one day, she was really sick, and she cried out to God, and she said, I hope you understand. I hope you're kind and compassionate and understand that I'm sick today and I can't serve you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Right? But she felt the weight of like the guilt of like not serving that God, right? And then she said, well, if you're God, show me who you are, right? That very day, her daughter gets a Bible from a friend in her school, and she brings it home, and she says, Mom, my friend gave me a gift. This is it. You want to see it? And she picks out the Bible, and her mom reads the whole gospel that day, and she sees Jesus' love and compassion, and how it was his heart to heal people, right? And how yes. the woman reached out and touched him, and she was healed,
yeah.
right? And that changed her life,
mm-hmm.
and she got saved. right? And she came to our church and she served God. And then, yes, she endured persecution, because maybe that's another thing we could talk about. Like, Hinduism is a very communal religion.
Right.
So if you turn away, if you find Christ, if you turn away to a different religion, right, it kind of looks bad on your family.
Right.
They feel like you've abandoned them, and their reputation goes down because it's all communal, right? So she endured persecution for a lot of years, mm-hmm. but she served Christ. Why? Because she found that God actually cares about her, and He doesn't care about what she can do for Him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that was so such a powerful story.
Yeah, just the thought of, there's nothing that I can do for God.
Yeah.
Because He's done everything for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the message that we're bringing people is, I don't need to set out on a path where I renounce everything.
Yeah.
Or I don't need to, you know, adopt a completely different lifestyle where I try to better myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the bondage that people put themselves in.
Yeah.
You know, worshiping an idol, like taking on this burden of righting wrongs and morality and keeping a standard. But the beauty of the message that we're saying is that, you know, your sins have been paid for.
Yeah.
By Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, like the darkness is there.
Mm-hmm.
But those that are really looking for the light, like the lady, she was seeking for it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a promise in the Bible, is like, seek and you will find.
Yeah.
You know, and she was. And it's like the story of like people in the Bible when they met Jesus. He never said to them like, thank you for like believing in me. He said, your faith has made you well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the people that like God is looking for.
Yeah.
Is like those with like a willing heart.
Yeah.
You know, and there's many people out there in these religions that are lost.
They reach the end of themselves, right? Like futile attempts, and they're lost and they're broken, right? The God doesn't hear them. What happens? Like I feel like it is a very fair weather religion.
Yeah.
Like when I have, okay, let's move to Isaiah 44. This is good.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so in this, right, there's a man, and he cuts down a tree, right? And then the first thing he does is he takes part of it and warms himself up, right?
Yeah.
The second thing he does is he kindles a fire and bakes bread on it. And the third thing he does is, with whatever is left, he makes a god and worships it, right?
Yeah.
So you see what I'm saying? Like when he has sufficient, when he's sufficient, right? After he's met all his needs, he makes a god and worships it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's think of this. The cold doesn't go away. It gets colder and colder, right? And slowly he's cutting off a little more of the wood, of the idol, and using it for fuel, right?
Yeah.
He cuts a little more off and he uses it to bake bread, maybe, right? And soon his idol is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and he's not there anymore. And soon he's out of wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has no God to pray to, and he cries out in his distress, right? That's where people are. I feel like a lot of people reach that place in India, and they reach a point where they were self-sufficient, and they had a God. It was a God of the leftovers, right? And now they're not sufficient because their God stopped providing for them,
mm-hmm.
right? And now they're suffering, but they're crying out, but there's no one to listen to them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why the fields are white for harvest, or brown for harvest. but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I had to put that in.
Yeah, you did. It's okay. You got to get those jokes in.
but yeah, they're really hungry. And like, maybe that's why we have so many churches in India.
Yeah.
Right. Because people are being freed from their bondage. Right, and they're realizing that there's so much more. There's so much more. There's a God who cares about them so deeply.
Yeah, and it's really a work of the Spirit.
It is.
And it's being led by the Spirit and walking in the Spirit.
Yeah.
What's so funny?
I like how you When I was about to say that, you just went, mm-mm.
Well, I knew what you were going to say. And so, yeah.
But I guess, like, what we're trying to leave people with is that it doesn't have to be such a scary thing to go and talk to somebody about a religion that's seemingly so dark and putting them in bondage. It's really a simple statement by faith that could open doors that have been shut for years,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what the power of the gospel is that you don't go in your own strength.
Yeah.
Like God sends you.
Yeah.
And I go.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that. Yeah. Isaiah 55, my word does not return void. It's not my words, but it's his word that doesn't return void, you know? Yeah.
Preach it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. And God is moving and there's people that are seeking and I don't know. Like, some people say we're living in the last days, but really it's like we're getting ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, we have something in our hearts that's from God.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really what we're sharing with people is that it's like there's so much to be looking forward to in this life because there's one life that we get to live. And then we're going to be with God for all of eternity.
Yeah.
And then it's in this life, like, we're never going to be able to have faith in any other life other than this one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, such a beautiful thing that God has given us.
Yeah.
Is faith is something that's bound by time.
Yeah.
Mm. You know? And we have a message for people. And it's the most life-transforming one.
Yeah. We have a message of hope. I think of another story. And maybe I mean, maybe I can name him. He's Pastor Aviram. He's in Lucknow, and he grew up in a Hindu family. His father was a sage, very very holy man. Would wake up at 4 a.m. and he would not shave his beard or cut his hair. Totally devoted to God. I don't know what way he focused on, but this guy, Pastor Aviram, he moved to Mumbai, you know, to look for work.
Mm-hmm.
And someone gave him a tract on the road, right? And he read that and he put it in his pocket and he went a little further and he found another tract. It was Greater Grace. And he put it in his pocket. He went home and he read it and he came to a church service, right? He grew up in a traditional Hindu home, right? So far from God. But the message of hope was what got him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it changed his life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he went from being so far from God to proclaiming him on the street. Like, he's bold. He is bold. If you know him, he's bold. He's so awesome. Right? So that's what this message has the power to do. Right? Not only like give you an eternal future, eternal hope, but like even in this life, it gives you boldness. It gives you security. Right? That's what we have to offer, security.
And significance.
And significance. Right? Isn't that what Buddhism talks about? Like, I want to empty myself of desire.
Yeah. Like, I'm not a significant person. Like, what I want maybe doesn't matter so much.
Yeah. Could we talk a little bit about that?
Could you unpack it? Because, like, you, like, I don't know. Because I just think about, like, the founder, you know? His name was Gautama.
Okay.
If I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah.
But he, like, set out to discover the fact that he saw something that really troubled him, and that was suffering. And so instead of coming to the place where you recognize, I live in a world that's evil, people are dying, mm-hmm. they can't save themselves, it was like, okay, let me deny myself of pleasures and earthly sorrow and pain and, like, live an ascetic life.
Mm-hmm.
But then that isn't what worked either.
Yeah.
So he kind of put himself in a place where it's like, I have to make this decision and live a balanced life.
Yeah.
But that's really difficult for man because he's a sinner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we are without God, without Christ, like there's no good in us.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's good in terms of like the good and evil from the wrong tree.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, no, not good by any means.
Mm-hmm.
So what is pleasure?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to run towards pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I deny it in my flesh?
Yeah.
But when we talk to these people, we're saying, it's not about denying your pleasures. It's about believing in someone who can deliver you from this body of sin and death.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not about denying it. It's like you no longer want to, you know? So that's what we're trying to share with people, yeah, is you can't in and of yourself deny something, because you can't motivate yourself to do that. You're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back to your point of guilt and condemnation and bondage that people are in because they feel like they've wronged God or they've wronged the system, that's a weight that nobody should bear. God is even saying you don't need to bear that.
Yeah.
He's saying, like, what does the Bible have to say? He says, like, give me your burden, like, cast your cares on me. Yeah. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. Like, religion has a weight that's just so heavy. They're saying, you know, earthly pleasures, deny yourself. Another religion is saying, pleasures, oh, go for it.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is the truth?
Yeah.
God is saying none of that.
None
He's
of that.
Saying, I don't need you to try and make yourself better, or I don't need you to try and deny yourself. Yeah. I need you to accept me.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to believe in me.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
Yeah. I think this is really interesting, is that when he decided to renounce all his desires, right? Good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up abandoning his infant son and his wife.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was a good desire to want to care for them, but even a good desire is not, like, he wanted to eradicate desire completely. And that's selfish. That's selfish desire. Right?
Yeah.
In the end, that is desire. That selfish desire, right? Is it, like, they have this thing where they attain nirvana, mm-hmm, right? Which is, what does it mean? Enlightenment?
Right. Yes, that's right? What it means.
And in order to do that, they try to eradicate desire. If you eradicate desire from yourself completely, you will attain nirvana. But even to attain nirvana requires a desire to attain nirvana.
Yeah.
So it's contradictory.
So it's kind of flawed.
It is kind of flawed in its origin. You know? Yeah. I mean, I think it's what's awesome is that he never claimed to be God.
Yeah.
He did not claim to be God. But there's one person. If you dig Buddha's grave, you'll still find his remains in there. Right? Right?
Right? I hope so.
But Jesus claimed to be God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? And he rose again. He came, he took our sins, and he rose again. What a message. I like what you said. I don't need to renounce pleasures, right? I run to them because in his presence, there's fullness of joy and pleasures evermore.
Yeah.
Right? I run to it. I run to him and there's pleasures evermore. And yes, I have my sin nature and we address the sin nature. We address the depravity of man. Right? We know that there's nothing we can do, which is why this is unmerited favor. And I think they have this thing in Buddhism where you earn up merit by doing good deeds, and a saint can transfer merit to another undeserving person.
Yeah.
So you see, it's kind of like a picture of I feel like that's a good segue into the gospel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have someone who lived a sinless life. He was Jesus.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And now he gives us unmerited favor. He transfers his merit to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's I feel like that's another good segue into.
But it's sharing. Like it goes beyond merit.
Yeah.
It's like it's not even like good or bad by human standard.
Yeah.
It's eternal.
Yeah. Yeah. What could we as we wrap up? What could we take away from this? You know,
mm-hmm.
I feel like something I got from this is like, yeah, I don't need to memorize all of this because this is just information that gives me an insight into the Indian culture. Right? The traditions. Because someone grows up in this and they're fed this all the time. And this is how they think. It affects the way they do things. It affects the way they make decisions. So this gives me real insight into their lives. And now as I talk to them, I can ask questions about what they believe. Mm-hmm. Right? And I can maybe relate with them on a better level.
Right.
Right? And then I keep finding segues. I don't push. But I find a little segue to the gospel. Right, 1 Peter 3:15. Give a reason for the hope that is in you. When they ask, why do you have so much hope? we're suffering. Why do you have so much hope? Why are you filled with joy? I think one thing that, sorry, just, I have to say the story. We had this guy, he was a security guard, and he saw my dad really like suffer, right? Mm-hmm. But every time he saw him, he would see a big smile on his face.
Yeah.
And he asked me, like, why does he always smile? Mm-hmm. Why does he always smile, you know? And I could share with him, like, this is because he has Jesus in his heart, right?
Yeah.
And that's the answer. Yeah. I think that's really cool. We have hope in us, and hope is necessary for people, you know?
Amen, yeah.
Closing thought?
Like, just our message is really the way we live our life, you know?
Yeah.
Because maybe there's places that we're going to go and people that we're going to meet that will see our life, and that will speak maybe louder than anything that we could ever say.
Yeah.
And that the gospel is working through us in our life. And that's the message that we're bringing people.
Yeah. Yeah. I would encourage people to pray for India and really, really think about come visiting us, you know, because like it's very open. It's so open. People are hungry for the gospel.
The fields are?
White.
White.
White. Amen. All right. This is awesome. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And be sure to join us tomorrow as we continue this topic about reaching people from different backgrounds. Amen.